Hello, welcome to Holland Village. Today is Thursday, September the 9th, 1999. In the fireside room this evening is Ruth Doherty, and today's session number is DAR 99-1, and it is titled Medieval History of the Church, the Early Christian Architecture. Let's listen.
A vast period of time. We're talking about probably from 500 to 1300, 1400. Actually, the Middle Ages are often delineated from the end of the Roman Empire, or from the fall of Rome in 476. There's some variation, but if we're going to look at Christian architecture, we have to go back. We have to go back to the time that what Christian architecture depends on. And Christian architecture is going to depend on the models that are there. How many of you have been on a building committee for a new building, for a new church building? So when you do that, what do you look for ideas?
Existing.
Experts.
Experts in existing buildings. And this is what they're doing. At the time that the Christians are starting to build their own buildings, there have been no Christian churches before that. They were worshiping in homes. And they developed houses and began to worship within the houses. You know how some people do have home churches. But when they started to build, then they had to go into the following the models that Rome had established for it. So to do that, I'll show that to you. Don, would you turn on the power, please? It should be focused. This is a this is a basilica. This is a basilica style building, actually in Roxeter, England, because the Romans had expanded themselves all the way into England and brought Christianity into England. In order to drop it, you have to open it. Have to open it first, and then you can drop it. And so this is a basilica style building, would be long and narrow, have a place where the walls would be supported by pillars here and here, and then the walls would be lower down here. And there would be the triforium up above at the top. This is a church. This is the way St. Peter's looked in Rome, the first early St. Peter's. You can see it as a basilica-style building, and in front of it, you had this courtyard. Now, one of the things, do you know what the liturgy was or what the plan was for baptism in the early Christian church? How about the unbaptized? The unbaptized could not go into the basilica. They would have to wait outside here until they had been trained and baptized. And the baptism in the early church was very strict. It was later on, a king would be baptized, and then he'd say, okay, my whole country is going to get baptized now. But that's not the way it was in the early Christian church. They were very strict about who was going to be a member, and you had to go through a real process before you could be baptized. Maybe you've been to Grace Cathedral. This is where I've experienced it. Those people who have not been baptized will not be in the church during the Eucharist. And they leave in order to have training, and then after the Eucharist, then they join together with the congregation. But you can see the basilica-style building, much like the Roman basilica. Oh, by the way, this would be like the Roman Forum. This is St. Paul's outside the walls in Rome. And you can see the inside of a basilica building with the pillars that are holding up the side walls. If you don't have those pillars, the walls would have fallen. And here's Santa Maria Maggiore, the same thing. You would see up from the outside, you have that basilica structure. Here, the ceiling has been covered now with this wonderful gold bossing and relief. When you're in this building, you realize that these pictures have been taken with extra light. If you're in this building, you do not have much light because these are relatively small windows to light up this kind of a room. Also, there would be no altar here. You would have a space like this where this would be the chair for the cathedra for the bishop, and the priests would sit around it, but there was not actually the very first altar. And this is why you see it this size, where some of the tombs of the saints, some of those stone tombs, those big rectangular sarcophagi, would be brought in and would be set up as the first altars. This is a church from Ravenna in the 400s.
Where's Ravenna?
Ravenna is in Italy, west of Venice.
On the Adriatic.
On the Adriatic, right. And this is a church built by the Arians. Arians were a heresy. In the First Council of Nicaea in 325, they had decided whether to determine what Jesus was like. Was Jesus all man, all God, man and God, how much God, how much man, and so forth. And they determined at that time essentially the same thing that we espouse as Christians. But the Arians were saying, well, we're not so sure Jesus was all God. Perhaps Jesus was only the highest man of creation. So consequently, they were still Christians, but not quite the same, and they were considered heretics by some. Nevertheless, most of Europe first became Arian before they became what we would call Orthodox Christians. This is a church built later than and the Orthodox, but you can see exactly the same plan. You have the basilica structure, and you have this triangular support in the roof, making essentially the ceiling flat, but open, so you have this triangle up at the top. This would be places for mosaics along the side. These were often marble. Sometimes in some churches where they were not very rich, they would take the marble pillars from old Roman forums, colosseums, etc., in order to be able to build their churches. And it's very easy to see where some pillars don't match. But here they're all matching. That same opening that you saw that I showed you, this entrance in the early Christian church, was still the kind of thing that they built in the 1100s, excuse me, in the 1000s, in Milan for San Ambrogio. By the way, that word Ambrogio comes from is an interesting thing. He was Saint Ambrose, and they thought he was so sweet, such a sweet person. That's why we have the word Ambrogio. It's a very interesting church on the inside. I don't have a picture of that to show you. Well, most of the churches that were built outside of regal palaces were for monasteries. And this is a church of St. Martin of Tours in France, which no longer exists. So many of these old churches have been taken down, rebuilt, something added to. Someone said something about obsolescence the other day in the class when we were talking about how much money is wasted. And I think of how many churches have been torn down in order to be rebuilt in the latest fashion. Not just necessarily to make them bigger, but to make them prettier, as people saw it. This is from the Bible of St. Louis, that would be Louis the Ninth of France. And in that Bible we see God, not necessarily Jesus, because God then becomes figured as God the Father, who is the creator of the world, the architect of the world. And here we have what? A what?
A pomegranate? No.
Not a pomegranate. You're being too realistic.
Yeah, okay.
No, a circle.
Okay.
Thank you. A sphere. You have to say it louder. You know, I can't hear it. You also have the circle of the spheres here, supposedly heaven's beyond it. But here, one of the things that we see in architecture is a circle is often used as a symbol for the celestial world. What is a symbol for Earth?
It's a circle.
Not a circle.
It's a globe.
We see a globe as we see a globe now, but not for as a symbol. We have the Bible talks about the four corners of the earth. So the earth becomes a square. The heavenly celestial area is a circle. This is a church that is built on a circle. It was built in 340 for St. Constanza. That was the daughter of Constantine. And when she died, he built this church in Rome, still standing there. It's built very much on the Roman pattern, but very round. Has all the Roman pillars and balustrades and so forth. Well, this then becomes a symbol for a very important kind of church. This is a funereal church. So when they want to build a church for over the Holy Sepulchre, what kind of a shape are they going to use? Will they use a basilica? A long, narrow? What shape will they use? A round circle. And so this is the place, this is a model that I was able to take a photograph of in Santiago de Compostela. This is where the tomb of Jesus is supposedly under that dome, in that circular area. And otherwise they have a basilica style church here with, again, the entrance that they would have had before. This changes then over the years. This is the same place. And here again is the tomb over that circular part of the building. Well, then that circle, and here it is again. This is the way the church looked in the 12th century. This is at the time after the Crusades, when the Latin Christians had taken over Jerusalem. They rebuilt the church. And remember who I said was the king of Jerusalem? A Norseman. So they added a Norman tower. So it's not surprising for you that the Knights Templars, who were the knights who were supposed to protect the Holy Sepulchre, would then build their churches in a circle. or in a shape close to a circle. The first one is in Oxford. This is in Segovia, Spain. Now, one of the connections that we have between death and the building is a baptism. You are, and I see if I can get it out of me, you are buried with Christ through baptism into death. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And so the shape for the baptismals were also in a circle, or close to a circle. This is an Arian baptismal. And the one that was built for the Orthodox Christians about a block away is exactly the same shape and has exactly the same kind of mosaics in it. But that is definitely in the circle. And can you think of other baptismals in other places that you've been that are in that shape? Pavia?
Venus.
Cremona? What?
There isn't one in Venus?
Venice. I don't remember, yeah. But it might be. Certainly in Florence.
In Florence,
you have that baptismal outside in front of the cathedral. I mean, this is very normal in Italy to have that very special building, and there are other places throughout the world where that's true. And you might find that in some churches, you have a circular room that you go through in the process of going into the church. This becomes a process that you move through this baptismal area into the church. Anyway, another great, wonderful church built on that with that round effect is the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul now, but was Constantinople. It is probably, this is, I wanted to go to Turkey. If I had gone to Turkey and just seen the Hagia Sophia, I think it would have satisfied me, because to have made this, now that's a pilgrimage to go to see something that important, where you could talk about what was a holy place for me was this Hagia Sophia. I'd heard so much about it. It was built in about 550. Now that's early. That's a millennium and a half ago. It's huge. I feel so badly that I have only a few of my slides here. I don't have my wonderful slides of this to show you what it really is like. This dome lit with all these many windows just seems to float over this huge, huge space. It is a huge space. You have this hemisphere here and a hemisphere here. I mean, this is actually flat, but here is a hemisphere. This is a complete circle, and on this side is a complete hemisphere with three hemispheres beside that, which go on and extend. So you just keep on moving into this marvelous, marvelous church, which is full of marble, full of mosaics, full of gold leaf. It is a wonder. It was damaged in about 100 years after it was built in an earthquake. And that was then restored, brought down maybe a little lower, and then many, many more supports, pilasters put on the outside to hold it up. This dome is held up with pendentives, these triangular things that hold up, supported on the four corners, this huge mammoth dome. I've read church, did you want to say something, Evelyn?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, because it's a little bit different.
I was just going to say, maybe on the other picture, pointing out the minarets, that might not be apparent.
I'll do it on the next slide.
On that.
Okay. I was reading an architecture on Islamic architecture, where many of the mosques, marvelous, mosques are built exactly like this. And they said, well, we didn't imitate the Hagia Sophia. I think, oh, I don't believe you. I don't believe you, because these others were built much later. In 1204, in the Fourth Crusades, the Latin Christians came in, pushed out the Eastern Orthodox, and were in possession of the Hagia Sophia for 60 years. Then the Byzantines were able to come back. But they weren't able, partly because of the weakening in that Fourth Crusade, they were not able to stay there that long. And in 1453, the Muslims pushed them out. The Muslims came in on Tuesday. On Friday, they had already converted this church into a mosque. It was the most important thing that they could do in Constantinople, was to claim the Hagia Sophia. And so therefore, you see these things that are in here, which are Islamic, and also some of the parts for their worship are still there. This has been a museum since about 1925. And one of the things then that they did is build these minarets and also put these tombs of some of their leaders around it. Those were not there before, but these are the huge supports that help hold up the building. Anybody have any questions or comments on that? Justinian, who built that, here he is. He's not what you call the most modest of men. Was also built this church, San Vitale, in Ravenna, about the same time. Not as huge, but again, it is also essentially round. It is, however, octagular. And what I told you before about the symbols, the circle is a symbol of heaven, and the square is a symbol of
earth.
You've put a square and a circle together and straighten your lines out a little bit, you have an octagonal building. And so Justinian here is building a church that is both supposedly of heaven and of earth. He is the king, but at the same time, Justinian was the ruler of the Eastern Orthodox Church. So he puts it together to make this building, which is just rich with mosaics. When people come here, and the rest, where there's no mosaics, it's marble. It is an absolutely beautiful church.
How old is that church?
That was built about 550.
It must have taken years to build those churches. And how much money?
Is this still in Turkey now?
This is again back in Ravenna, in Italy.
Back in Italy.
Not far from Venice. And this was the center of, this was actually the capital of the western part of the empire at that time. So he made it his capital in the western part of the empire. Well, Charlemagne, who comes in 800 now, much later, also built himself a church and at the same time a throne, a place for his throne. What is his shape of his church?
Octagonal,
still eight sides. He is also saying that he is a priest in the church. This is a very important statement that he is making. I am working for the church. I am not only a king, but I am also working for the church. So he builds himself this church, which we can still see in Aachen or Aix-la-Chapelle. Actually, in that area that France and Germany have been fighting over all for many years, ever since then, since 843 anyway.
That chandelier also octagonal?
I suspect you're right, but I'm not sure. It could be circular.
You know this square foot, how big is that?
How big is this?
Well, that chain goes up there, it's five stories.
Yeah, it's not small.
Ruth, are you saying this is in Alsace-Lorraine?
It's near that.
Because that's the territories.
It's in what was called Lotharingia.
Lotharingia.
Which was between where Charlemagne divided, or Charlemagne's son, Pius, divided his lands in three parts. So you had one for Louis the Bald, and Charles. Louis the German, Charles the Bald, and Lothar. And Lothar got a skinny piece, but he was supposed to rule. But, you know, he got squished. Well, now look at this building. See, I'll go back here. This is 800. Now this is 200 years later. This is the Essen Cathedral in Germany.
What? What cathedral?
Essen, in Germany. Essen, in Germany. Who are they imitating? Pretty obvious, isn't it? And this is the Ottmarsheim church, using the same architecture. It's about the same time. And this is what it looks like on the exterior. This is in Germany now. The part that then becomes the circular part in most of the churches that we see is the apse. You know that great word in crossword puzzles? It's every time you get it almost, is the apse. And this is one of my favorite churches. Now I can't think of the name of it, but it's in France. Beautiful white marble, but giving you that very much a circular part of the apse, and you're going to see more of that. This is supposedly, when we went to Chéreau in France, this is one of the places that we were bicycling into, and we saw this tower, and we said, what's that? And they said, well, that's the Tower of Charlemagne. Well, when I realized why they called it the Tower of Charlemagne, it's one in imitation of Charlemagne's tower. This was a part of the church of a monastery. One of the many things that is a monastery. By the way, supposedly, the foreskin of Jesus was the most important relic in that particular monastery. I thought you'd appreciate that. Well, I'm going to show you a different kind of church now, where they use the round and the circle in another aspect. This is in Ephesus. You only see these remains now, but this is what the church looked like originally. This was a church built in the 500s also. You have this entrance, but what is different about this basilica? The domes. Because here you have combined the domes that you saw in the Hagia Sophia with the basilica style. And this would give an openness inside. The domes made it possible to do away with some of those pillars. Now I'll show you, and one example of that is St. Mark's in Venice, which St. Mark's was very in close ties with Constantinople. They were great trading partners. And so Venice brought over the Byzantine mosaicists to build their churches. And they are also picking up many of the same details in terms of church construction. I want you to know, I have a granddaughter who is now, one of my granddaughters is now 18. She sang a solo in this church. And it's one of those resounding churches where you can sing and the sound just radiates. And she has a beautiful high soprano voice. One of, you know, I've got to push something like that in. But you can see here that there are these domes on top. That allows to have not only, you no longer see that triangular square space at the top. You see this huge dome. Is it you're the part of the church that is earthly extends itself up into heaven to this huge dome. So you have this expansion of space in these dome churches. You can also see how Byzantine those churches are. This is St. Mark's. I've got to go back and take another look at St. Mark's, I must admit. Now here's another church. This is not St. Mark's. This is a church in France that is imitating St. Mark's. It's built about 100 years later. This is Perigord. Have you ever been there? In the Perigord? It by no means is as beautiful interiorly as St. Mark's, but in the process of having these domes instead of a flat roof, you have a huge space interiorly.
When was that built?
This was built about 1100. And you see, you have this space, but it doesn't have the light that Hagia Sophia has, does it? Mm-hmm. They're just not, they're not as confident about themselves. Still have that dome set on pentatives, but it's set back. It's the walls are much heavier, much more depending on the weight and the breadth of these walls in order to hold up those domes. It is not as engineered with the same proficiency that the Hagia Sophia was engineered. Another church that I went to and enjoyed the organ concert in here in Angoulême has a similar dome. It's not too far from Perigord. This is the facade, and one of the things that you'll find about many churches is that in the facade, they have all sorts of pictures. And I have shown you this one before of these battling soldiers. Well, that's in the front of this church in Angoulême. And I got to tell a story. This is one of those, we bicycled to so many of these places, not to Turkey, but we bicycled here to Angoulême. And we were so pleased. We had found a wonderful little hotel off the main street. And then we thought, oh, isn't this wonderful? It's going to be quiet here. The women took our bicycles. They're two little old ladies. They said, well, you can put your bicycles right here. It was in the living room, right next to the grandfather clock. Mm-hmm. Now, that's saying something about how nice they were to bicyclists. You know, when you bring your bicycle in, it's been going, you've gone a long distance and come two sweaty bodies and a bicyclist. So we thought, we are in heaven. But we had noticed as we were coming in that there were some metal plates on the road, but this was a side street, no problem. That side street became Grand Central Station about 4 o'clock in the morning, and trucks came clattering over the metal and sort of turned our celestial place into something else. That's my memory of Angoulême. The wonderful sounds in the church here and the clatter on the street outside of our little hotel. Now I'm going to go back to Ravenna. Back to the 400s. This is the Church of Galla Placidia. It is a small little church built sort of in a cross. This would be a Greek cross, equal sides, each arm having the same length. And this would be the crossing. Where they crossed, this would be called the crossing. This is another jewel box with these lovely little mosaics inside of them. It doesn't hold very many people. Just a treasure, though. I found this, saw this church not far from Limoges. You know the place where you have wonderful china? This is in France. I saw this, I was bicycling with my husband and his sons, and I said, it's Sunday morning, I've got to go to church. I've got to go into this church. I knew this was a special place. So here I am in my shorts. I think I had sleeves, something over my shoulders. But they were very nice and welcomed me into this church. But it doesn't have any aisles. It is a lovely church. You notice it's built of dark stone. It's heavy. It has a small dome over the center. Over the center crossing has a transept, a lovely little apse. But it's a very small church. And I realized that I came in there and they had given me about a half an hour. They went across the street and had hot chocolate while I went to church. That's sort of typical. But I felt a little embarrassed going in here and then not staying for the whole service. But it was a lovely little church and I'd love to go back to that. Well, this is the third time I'm going to say that most of the churches in the early period, in fact, well into the 12th century, were built initially for monasteries. They were initially built for the monks. And sometimes the people would not even be allowed to go into them. Sometimes the whole church would be reserved just for the monks. Then other times they would close off the front part, allow people to be in the back and not in front. If you've been to York Minster, you know that they have the choir in front, that's where the monks would have been, and then the people could stay in the back part. And there would have been a separation. Here we can see most of the churches were aligned east to west. Now that's not really true, because if they were built initially on another church, a pagan church, a pagan holy place, in order to say what we have and what we're building here is so important, we will follow the same alignment. They will supplant Christianity with something else, and they wouldn't change the alignment of the church. But where it was built completely new, this was the west front, and this was facing east. Therefore, later on when they had the rose window, you would have the wonderful west sun coming in, or the eastern morning sun coming in on that side. Here is your transept, which would form a cross, and this is the crossing. Still we have a basilica style. This is the second church of Cluny, which is a monastery. And you have your entrance, your narthex, which often had a chapel above it, your main church, the crossing, and then the apse. I just am putting it there because that is a rather important church. This is Dijon. You see how the basilica style has been expanded. So now this church would have two aisles. You'd have pillars here, and pillars here, and then the wall. But you have a huge church here without a lot of light. These walls are relatively heavy, holding up walls have to be thick in order to hold up the roof. Now this has been expanded in order to take care of pilgrims who are going to come around here and worship relics. I haven't time to talk about relics today, but that that was one of the things that pilgrims, I mentioned going on a pilgrimage yesterday, though I wasn't worshiping relics, I want you to swear to that. But people did this because, as a little bit as Evelyn was saying, people could sense a holiness, God's presence in some of the bones, in some of the hair and things of people who had died before them that they saw as saints. Those would be the relics. That church is only there in fragments. Many of the churches that were pilgrimage churches that were formed in the form of crosses, and all of these chapels here would be there in order to where a priest could have masses at where different relics would be revered. This is Santiago de Compostela. This is where the pilgrimage where I went that I talked about yesterday. This is Limoges, near that little church with bricks where they had no pillars. This is Conques. This is Toulouse. And this is Vézelay. But notice how many chapels have been added. All of these are cross churches. This is Toulouse. Can you see what an extensive cross transept there is with a marvelous crossing tower, all the little chapels around it? This is a beautiful long church with a crypt in it. And a crypt is a place under the altar where relics were often kept. I'll show you some crypts later on. I don't have a picture of the crypt here. You know, it's hard to take pictures of crypts. That you go down a little stairway and then you're in a relatively small space. So it's hard to do that. Now, go back to Germany. This is Hildesheim. Can you see this is built right after the millennium? 1001 to 1030. What is the style here? Basilica. They have a crossing, a transept. And they have a west front. Actually, they have a rather massive west front. One of the things that we can see in some of these churches is that these were places that were safe. The whole idea for people to go to these churches was this is a place where it is safe. The ninth and the 10th centuries, the 8 and 900s, were not comfortable places for people in Western Europe. There were many reasons why people needed to be afraid. They needed to be afraid of invaders. They needed to be afraid of warriors. They were afraid of nature because they couldn't understand what was happening. In fact, they were even afraid of God. But they would come into these places to worship and they could feel a sense of security, a holy place where it was safe. And it often showed by the way their churches are built. This is a huge west front, like a castle, isn't it? It's not the only one. This is a Norman monastery in Normandy, Jumièges. This is in Kelm or Cologne, again, one of that territory that's been fought over, St. Pantaleon. I'm losing my voice. This is Cannes, C-A-E-N, I could never pronounce it right. The church that William the Conqueror built after he conquered England. Tremendous warrior kind of a frame. Here is, again, Hildesheim. And this time I'm going to take you inside. It's a beautiful church built 1,000 years ago. Seriously, 1,000 years ago. And I shown you pictures before of churches of the basilica style from the inside. What do you see that's different here?
Lights.
Say it louder.
Lights are hanging down.
Okay, lights are hanging down. Good. More.
Arches.
We don't just have a flat ceiling. We have arches. This is a big, and why, where would they get the arches? What's
that? That's like the great mosque at Cordoba, the Muslim.
The Muslims were building?
The design with the...
And they had the same striations, didn't they?
The same striations.
The same red and white. It's amazing that the Muslim architecture built about 800 in Spain influences France so intensely, France and Germany, solding this and decorating the same way. But you still have a flat ceiling, don't you?
No.
You have a flat ceiling, but you have these arches intercepting it. You have a flat painted ceiling.
The arches help support the ceiling.
The arches
help keep
support.
The walls together.
Well, they might actually push the walls out, unfortunately, but that's what they're doing. Now, this is San Miniato in Florence. How many of you have seen this? This is high on the hill, but you notice the same thing, do you? You have the arches, and you have these traverses, essentially a flat ceiling, but it's open. Something else about San Miniato is that you can actually see the crypt. The altar is up here. It's not on the level. It's up here. And the crypt is down underneath. Now, this is one of the ways that you can actually see where the crypt is, and in a lot of churches you can go, and that it still exists. Some of the old churches. Some churches in Ravenna. There's an old church in Prague like that that has the crypt underneath. But most of the time now, most of the churches, we cannot see that crypt. This is a crypt in Tournus, which actually had a chapel down here. And it goes around in a circle again, so you could have small rooms off from that. And there was a well there. So the church is actually built on a site that people had considered holy, where the well is often considered a very holy place. And that is in the center of this church. Now this is probably the most interesting church architecturally besides the Hagia Sophia. And it's going to be hard to understand this. In this church, you have those same arches that you saw at Hildesheim or San Miniato, but then they also have an arch that goes this way. And I'll show you the picture of it, and then you may be able to see it better. So you have the cross arches, the Romanesque arches, coming across this way, decorated just like in Cordoba, in the mosque in Cordoba. But then they have a barrel vault. That's what they call it when you have an arch like this, like half a barrel. They call it a barrel vault coming across from this arch to that. And strangely enough, this, the way it is built, the walls don't have to be very thick. It is a most unique engineering feat to have built this particular church in Tournus in this way. The walls did not have to be thick. It did not need a lot of buttressing. There was a lot of support, but it was never duplicated. And why not? I think it's because it was not very satisfactory aesthetically. It's sort of broken up. even though it is a wonderful church, and when I go there, I'm just thrilled by it. But it was never repeated. It was an experiment that was never repeated. It seemed that people wanted to have this constant, even procession, to have these arches and not have them broken up sideways. This is Tournus. I showed you that church before that has the great cross. This is the same church. And you move forward. It is one of those things that sort of urges the pilgrim on, urges the pilgrim into the center to come close to the altar, to come to revere the relics that are around in the apse, but not rush it. You can go very peacefully, very patiently down this place and enjoy it. The transept is wonderful. It has marvelous frescoes. Another church built like that was the third church of Cluny. This is a monastery. Cluny was the richest monastery in Europe ever. Had about 400 houses underneath it, and all of them were quite wealthy. And they essentially worked on that pilgrimage route. Have any of you heard me talk about that? To Santiago de Compostela. This church is 90 feet high, but does no longer exist. It was destroyed in the French Revolution and sold as a quarry. This is about all that's left, is this transept. And if you can get an impression of how high and impressive this church was from that, or maybe from this. There I am in the narthex. This is the narthex. That's the entrance to the church. It's not the church. This place was huge, and we've had a little to do here with Hildegard and George about whether Spire was the biggest church in Europe or Cluny. I say Spire was the biggest church in Europe, Christian church before St. Peter's in Rome, at the time it was built. This continued to be the biggest church in Europe until St. Peter's was built. Huge, yes?
Should we mention that the worship we use this evening after the Taizé mode, the Taizé community is very close to this.
12 kilometers from there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By bicycle, it's not far.
Yeah.
And I was there. After I'd been here. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. By the way, one of the advantages of this church, and we're mentioning liturgy, I keep standing on that wire and then picking it up, is that the barrel vault here is marvelous for singing. And the Benedictines who followed, this is Benedict of Amiens, who followed Benedict of Nursia, were monks that spent almost all of their time praying and singing. So to build a church like this was very important for them because it was wonderful for their singing. I'll tell you, the village center is not a great place to sing. A church that's much like this is not very far away from there, Paray-le-Monial, and it is built almost as a model after the church in Cluny, but it's smaller. This is, what is this called? This is a test. Be ready. This part is called the
facade,
the west front. West front. This is the
transept.
This is the
crossing.
It is in the basilica style. Here's the west, what is it?
West front.
And it's just another picture of it. And then another exterior. And this is then, it's the crossword puzzle word.
Ipsos.
In the interior, this one was only 70 feet tall. And one of the things that you would find here, this is much like that other church that I love so much, but which is in marble, is that in that, this is too hard to see this picture, so I'm picking up from another Clunac church, Berge la Ville, which shows, here's your vulva, right?
Right.
And this is, shows Jesus here as a ruler with the apostles and the seraphims around him. It was a, some people will say that this is God the Father instead of Jesus, so I have a hard time identifying that. But when you look at this church now, how is this different from the other Church of Cluny? This is similar, but smaller, and how else is it different?
The arches are peaked.
The arches are peaked. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, why is that done?
What does it higher?
Well, it's a peaked roof.
It's a peaked roof, but what does that do architecturally?
Copy.
I'll show you another church. This is the Church of Champs. This is not far from Paray-le-Monial. It is built in a barrel vault, and it's been changed. Look at that church. What's happened to the walls?
Heavier.
So they're sagging out.
They're sagging out. They're pushing out. They're going this way. Because one of the things that are wrong, these have actually been changed. This was initially a barrel vault church, but the barrel vault, that Romanesque vault, pushes the pressure this way. You need very, 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 very heavy walls in order to support this. This church was not strong enough to take those barrel vaults, and so it has pushed out to each side. And consequently, they have changed the structure here, and they have also supported the walls more extensively. This is an extra support to hold these walls up. Oh, I'm going wrong direction. Wrong button. So I've gone through, this is sort of a review. We have the Romanesque. Why is it called Romanesque?
Roman style.
Roman style. The Roman arch, you go back and you see the Roman amphitheater, you see the Pantheon, all of that nice round arch. So it's been called a Romanesque after Rome. You know, that's a derogative. It's not, was not an applauding way. So it starts about the year 1000. You have the Abbey Church of Cluny, the first little one I showed you, just that half sketch there. Mont-Saint-Michel, the very initial part of the church, and I'll show you that in a minute, is a very Romanesque, up at the very top. Then it got fancy. There's your Cathedral of Spire. Then you begin the construction on the Cathedral of Pisa in Italy. The Abbey of Church in Cluny, which I just showed you with the barrel vaults. And then Durham Cathedral is built. And it is the first church in England that has a ribbed vaulting. And so I'll show you. Here's Mont-Saint-Michel. And these churches were built in the most sacred places you could find. So here's built on an island, built on the highest place. They're looking always for a holy place, a holy site in which to build their churches. And this is a church just at the top. All the rest is extra structure. Here's Durham. You've been to Durham in England? North of York. It is a beautiful, beautiful Romanesque church. You can definitely see the Romanesque arches here. And it is the first church done with ribbed vaulting in England. And actually, that ribbed vaulting is something where you put two arches together, and then it actually makes a peak. Do you see that? So you have, it becomes a peak, and it becomes a very strengthening thing. It's much stronger to make that kind of an arch. Then you take some of the weight off the walls. As they develop this further, you do not need these huge, huge pillars to support your walls. And as we're going to be seeing tomorrow, if I have a voice left, and you've got the guts and you're not off to Stehekin, we can show you what happens next. There's one thing I do not like about Durham Church, and that's the Galilee Chapel, because it's got such a history. They wouldn't let the women into the church. They would only let them into the Galilee Chapel in the back. They wouldn't let them in. Darn. And you know, when we went to Durham, I've got to go back because the Queen Mother was there and I wasn't invited. Darn. So I think I'll just stop there because otherwise I've got some more slides. Would you mind turning on the light? We have 1 minute before we go. Is there anybody have a question?
Pews in there in the
early time, no pews.
No pews, that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, everybody would stand, and so you would just move around.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
Since at that time they lived next door to Starvations.
Yes.
How do they have the time to build those things?
You know what? They starved the poor, actually. Somebody asked me yesterday or the other day, why did the people in the town of Vezelay burn the church? It was because the monks were taxing them so heavily in order to build that church. And that the people were in desperate straits, and the monasteries were the rich ones. When there was a French Revolution, they were very objecting to the nobles and the church, because of how much the church had drained them. Good question. So thank you very much.
Thank you.